Welcome to Wine by the Case,
where we uncork legal insights, one bottle, sometimes one glass at a time.
So we're talking today, Chris, about the Menendez parole hearing, which, as everybody, but I will go back, knows that they were convicted of murdering their parents, going back to, I think they've been in jail for like 30, or prison.
For 36 years.
Yeah, I think it's like 36 years. I think it was the late 80s maybe when this happened. I want to say 89 maybe. And initially they were sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, but because of their age under California, revamped their laws related to sentencing of youth, and they fell in that and they were resentenced and to 50 years to life. So, which opened up the ability for them to, try and get paroled. And we had both of the brothers, their parole hearings, and they ultimately, to kind of give you a spoiler alert, were denied. And we kind of want to dive into that situation. Mm-hmm. So, Chris, do you want to, like, kind of tell us, like, a little bit about the parole hearing, what they look at, what happened here?
Well, importantly, again, we think of them as the Menendez brothers, right?
Right.
We think of them as a group. Again, they are family. But at the same time, we forget that in a parole hearing, two separate people.
They were on two separate days. They were one after the other, and they were represented by the same attorney, Mark Garagos, right, who is a very, very famous criminal defense attorney, very well known. You may know his daughter, Ashley, was one of the Diddy attorneys. He's been on various cases, including the Michael Jackson case. He's got a list. He's very, very, very well known.
He's savvy, no doubt about it. But in a parole hearing, you don't have to be as savvy as needed for some of his high-profile cases, because what a parole board looks at is, what have you done for me lately? What have you done in prison that
and
puts
remorse,
you in
and remorse, and they also look at what you, if you are released, are you a danger to society?
Are you?
And what are you going to do if you're released?
Right.
How are you going to support
what
yourself?
What
are your plans?
Right. Have you shown the behavior necessary to show that you will not be a threat to society when you leave? That you've been compliant with the rules? And what it is that you have done to put yourself in a position that you are rehabilitated.
Right, and to show that you're going to be released and potentially be a productive part
member
of society.
Right.
It's kind of like when our kids go off to college, you know? Like, have you been good? What are you going to do? Like, you know, you sit them down. How do you plan on being a productive part of society? How are you going to support yourself?
And here, they were looking at a lot of their conduct in the prison environment.
Which is a normal part of, and the only difference is that they have been there for like 36 years, so they had a very long time to look at it.
And we can all imagine, 36 years. I mean, I certainly don't want to look at myself 36 years ago and go, judge me by that. But
and their record was pretty good. I mean, for 36 years and how old they were when they went in, and the fact that they had for much of the time up until a couple months ago no possibility of parole, their actual track record was pretty spotless with just a few and, in my opinion, very, very minor infractions.
Yeah. Well, particularly when you look at the other things they did. I know one of the brothers was involved with the prison library. And having
sort
of
like garden maybe and helping others
and again, that's got to be difficult.
Well, and let's back up. I mean, they have been saying this. The second trial, the one that got cut, there was a mistrial, and during the mistrial, there was a lot of testimony how they had been sexually abused. The second trial, that testimony was not allowed in when they were convicted. And they've also been very active, it's my understanding, in the prison with those trauma support type of groups, people who had similarly gone through these this sort of trauma, and they have been going, I believe, to extensive counseling as well mm-hmm. as part of that during these 36 years. Yeah. But what did they latch on to? So we have these very young kids, and yes, it was brutal. I don't think anybody is going to dispute that the parents were brutally murdered. They reloaded the shotgun, and I think a lot of people have a hard time that even with, the allegation that they were severely sexually abused by their father, then why was the mother also murdered that mm-hmm. day? So even with that, what did the parole board ultimately, mm-hmm. they denied? Why? I mean, why did they deny?
What's interesting is, again, we can go into the trauma, we can go into the trial, but that's how the parole board looks. That was, Lexis is hitting out of the beginning. They look at what have you done here? And one of the things they focused on was that they were using a cell phone and that they didn't have the right level of being able to use the cell phone.
Okay, well, yeah. And Chris, let's get into that. They do have access to telephone communication with the outside. Well, I mean, they obviously at some points if they're being punished, they may not for some infraction. They may not have temporary access, but overall, they do have the ability to have outside communication via telephone or whatever.
One of them said that they exceeded their cell phone use because of the privacy issues. They said people were constantly trying to interfere with their ability to send messages and things like that on the tablet, so that's why they wanted the cell phone use. But here's the thing,
where do you think that, I just got a curiosity, where are these cell phones coming from?
Exactly, that's what I'd say, where do you think they come from? Most likely from the black market economy that every prison has, and in order to get them in, you'd have to be a guard.
A visitor smuggled it in, I agree with you. The easiest would probably be a guard. But also, I don't know if people realize this, they don't get to use the phone for free. So even when they're talking to their attorney on the phone, the attorney or somebody or they're paying the prison system to, and I don't know how much it is a minute in California, is paying the prison system to have that community. It is not free. It is not free, which is ridiculous because that's ridiculous. But they're making money on these calls. They're making
a huge profit.
Yes, they make a huge profit. So obviously the prison system would hypothetically be losing money by allowing these cell phone use. Although they are claiming, the parole board alleges that it is a safety issue to allow them to have the cell phones.
Well, I can understand, but to hold it against one of the Menendez brothers compared to everybody else who's doing it and saying that's not a reason to necessarily look at their better behavior regarding their libraries, their gardens, their participation in the therapy sessions. They were not violent.
Yeah. Can we also get into the fact that cameras were not allowed here. By the way, parole hearings are open to the public, like a court hearing. They are not closed to the public. So they did not allow cameras in, which to me sounds so suspect as to why, when you have a case of this magnitude and what the real reason, it sounds to me like my gut is telling me the reason you would not want cameras in there is because you were up to some shady shit.
Or you just got to do the rubber stamp. No. Think of Florida and the clemency hearings that they do.
Right, but they were obviously concerned, in my opinion, that there was going to, if this was televised, that there was going to be pushback because it was ridiculous how it was being handled. Why wouldn't you let cameras in there? I mean, why?
Again, they don't. It was a courtroom for the most part on certain trials either. So
that's not true. They have to have a valid reason why. Now, in federal court, yes, they have held that they're not allowing cameras currently in the the courtrooms, and a lot of attorneys have a problem with that. I think a lot of people have a problem with it, not just because they are supposed to be open to the public.
Exactly.
But I think in this case, which, you know, this is very... I just think there was no reason in this case to carve out that this parole hearing was, you were not allowed to have media. They were allowed to have one representative, apparently, go in there, take notes, and then give the media, you know, give the media what happened. And obviously, the attorney that was in there knows what happened, and he had come out and said, more or less, in his own words, I'm paraphrasing, that it was... that it was basically, you know...
a fait accompli. Yeah.
Like you said, it was a rubber stamp thing because he, in his opinion, being there present, that the questions were not really on point, that he thought that a lot of the questions were ridiculous questions. Matter of fact, apparently there was a question about the cars they bought right after the murders and why is that. So, I mean,
what are your kids going to do with 500 cars?
But so, Chris, so some people are really pissed off about this because of the change of law. They believe that if you are convicted of a crime and you are sentenced to life without parole, that life without parole should be life without parole. And it should not. And I think we can go back to Manson because, you know, they were convicted of death and then the death penalty was taken off the table in California and then ultimately the ones that are still alive, you know, are serving life, and they do have a right to go up for parole, and people were mad at that. So there are a lot of people mad at that. This case, though, I don't know. You have very young kids. You have some pretty strong evidence that they were severely abused.
Yeah.
I do have a question about the mom, but I am not a I don't have a degree in trauma and how people react. And family members have come and said that they believe that the mother did know this was going on. She didn't do anything to stop it. That maybe she was complacent in it and maybe...
That's what the boys said. They said because of her complacency, they viewed her as him because they really thought she should protect him. But still, that's not part of the parole.
No, but that's not what the question I was laying this out because the question I was going to ask you was, do you think they should have gotten parole at this point in time? Do you think they should have gotten parole?
I do when you look at if it's a rehabilitative system, they change the law, let's go ahead and let people be productive members of society, particularly here when they have family support.
So I agree with you. I think that I do, and I know a lot of people may comment us for this. I think they should have been granted parole. It's been 36 years. They were very young when this happened. There are these extenuating circumstances about the fact that there's good evidence, in my opinion, that they were severely abused. And I think that they are not a danger. The key is I don't think they're a danger to society.
Nope.
That being said... I do think there is a little white privilege that we've gotten here, and because I don't think if we had two African-American brothers with everything else being the same said, that we would even be here talking about this right now.
And I agree with you.
Yeah. But I do think that they should be paroled. I know... that people feel that they murdered their parents and they need to die. They need to die in prison. But I think we're on the same page. We're on the same page with that. But who knows? They can apply. I believe I think it's either 3 or 5 more years. Again, it could be like the Mansons, that whole gang that they keep applying and keep getting. I think the difference is that family members are coming to the ones that are still alive, and saying, do not let them out.
Again, Theron, Bobby Kennedy, the guy who killed JFK, the guy who had John Lennon. I mean, there's just certain people that are getting out.
I think he got out.
Who?
No, I think the guy who killed, and we got to Google that. I think they just let out the guy who killed Lennon. Yeah, I think they paroled him. I think he finally got out. We should Google
what,
that.
40 years?
When was that? 81 or
John
something?
Hinckley?
Just got, but also John Hinckley, if I remember correctly, wasn't he placed in a mental institution? He was never in a prison.
Right. His parents had sought therapy and everything for him for years.
Yeah. I don't think he was ever in a prison situation. So that is a good, if he did get out, I'm going to Google that when we get off. Mm-hmm. That is a big difference there. So, yeah, so we will see what happens. And, you know, like I said, they could go up. They're still fairly young. I mean, overall, they're in their early 50s. So who the heck knows? So we did not have wine, if any of you did not notice that today. I didn't have wine, and Chris didn't have wine. And the reason is because, we are doing this remotely, as you can tell, and B, because Chris has carpet cleaners there, so shout out to the carpet cleaners, and she didn't want to look like Lush drinking wine in the middle of the day, and then I did not have wine because I don't have Chris to finish the bottle, and if I finished a whole bottle, then I would be a Lush, not appearing like a Lush. So you don't get any wine, but you can comment below and tell us what wine did you think would be a good pairing for the parole hearing. Maybe there's a wine called Parole. Yeah. And if you wanted, if you own a wine company or a wine store and you want to send us a wine that you think would be good, we will give you a shout out. We'd be happy to try the wine in our next podcast, even if it doesn't totally go with the theme. So do that. So comment below. Don't forget to follow and subscribe. And we still want to tell you cheers.
Cheers.